Ben and Jerry's partners with the Women's March, a group whose founders refuse to cut ties with an open anti-Semite. Glamour announces their 2018 Women of the Year, a list that of course includes no conservatives. And feminists give Chip Gaines heat for daring to say he wants another baby with his wife, Joanna. All that and more in this week's edition of Problematic Women, which we're now featuring as a weekly segment on the Daily Signal's podcast, hosted by the Daily Signal's managing editor, Kate Trinko. And a note for our most loyal listeners, we'll still be publishing our Problematic Women segments here on our Problematic Women podcast channel for you to tune in and enjoy, so please continue subscribing and leaving reviews.
Joining us today is Kelsey Harkness, a senior news producer at the Daily Signal, and Bree Payden, a staff writer for the Federalist and good friend of the Daily Signal. So, our first topic is ice cream, but not in the good way. Ben & Jerry's, that woke Vermont company, is out with a new flavor, Pecan Resist. Get it? Anyway, the company says, quote, alongside all those nutty chunks, this pint packs a powerful message under its lid. Together, we can build a more just and equitable tomorrow. We can peacefully resist the Trump administration's regressive and discriminatory policies and build a future that values inclusivity, equality, and justice for people of color, women, and the LGBTQ community, refugees, and immigrants, end quote. Kelsey, you wrote for the Daily Signal about this new flavor's problematic fundraising. Can you please share that with us?
Yeah, so when you first hear about this, you're probably like, why is this news? Every other day under the Trump administration, we have quote-unquote woke companies partnering and supporting through fundraising far-left activist groups like the Women's March. But I found this story particularly concerning given the timing of Ben & Jerry's decision to partner with the Women's March. So for months, if not years since the Women's March existed, conservatives and really anyone who knows who this character is have voiced serious concern about the founder's ties to an anti-Semite, Louis Farrakhan. And
you mean the founder of the Women's March's ties, right?
Yes. Sorry, did I say that wrong?
No. Just the founder.
Yeah. So there's four founders of the Women's March. Three of the four have ties to this man who most recently compared Jewish people to termites. He has a very awful track record when it comes to his rhetoric regarding Jews. It's not just problematic, it's sickening, it's disgusting, it's racist. And to see Ben & Jerry's announce this new exciting partnership with the Women's March just days after what's been called the deadliest hate crime against American Jews in our history, I think is really awful. I wrote about it in the Daily Signal, and part of what is most, I guess, surprising about this is that our friends over at IJR asked Ben & Jerry's about these problematic ties to this anti-Semite, and their response completely watered down any of those concerns. So do you want me to read it?
Yeah.
So this was their response when specifically asked about the Women's March's problematic ties to an anti-Semite, an open anti-Semite. We're comfortable with the idea that people and causes we partner with may have a point of view different from our own on some issues. They can be controversial, just as we can. Linda, who's one of the founders, may not agree with everything we've done, but the work that she has done to promote women's rights as co-chair of the Women's March is undeniably important, and we are proud to join her in that effort. So, in my opinion, dismissing anti-Semitism as, quote, a point of view different from our own, unquote, is incredibly insulting to the 11 people who just lost their lives over the weekend. And describing it as simply controversial is also insulting. Being being racist against Jewish people is not just controversial. We shouldn't legitimize it. Calling something controversial is almost legitimizing it as if this is an opinion that a controversial bill or something like that. This isn't just controversial. This is racist. And I think Ben and Jerry should be held accountable.
I think what's most frustrating to me in all of this is the double standard that we're seeing, right? As soon as this attack happened over the weekend in Pittsburgh, 11 people shot and killed in a synagogue, the blame was immediately thrown on Donald Trump. The blame was immediately thrown on, you know, rhetoric coming from his mouth and different things like that and his supporters. Just on Monday night, CNN's Don Lemon said that the biggest terroristic threat to this country are white men who are being radicalized, in his words, to the right because of Donald Trump, right? That was immediately where the blame was cast. That was immediately where it went. And then here we have individuals who are partnering with an open anti-Semitic person whose rhetoric is, if you're going to play that game of whose rhetoric is more closely tied to this, clearly Louis Farrakhan's rhetoric is more clearly tied to this, although I don't think we should ever blame anyone for anyone else's actions. But anyway, I think just the double standard here is shocking and appalling, and I think we need to continue to call these people out for not holding themselves to the same rules that they're applying on others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was part of what frustrated me about it. Because, of course, some of these Women March founders did host a rally against anti-Semitism. I think it was this weekend after the shooting. But, you know, as you said, Bree, there's no way if anyone on the right was associated with a figure like Farrakhan and all of his statements that it wouldn't be huge news, mentioned all the time, be like they would have to distance themselves. And, you know, that would seem appropriate. So it is a total double standard.
Yeah, I guess I looked at this situation as maybe this, you know, the attack over the weekend will finally be the straw that breaks the camel's back. It will rally the public, even many of their own supporters, to demand that its three founders at least denounce his rhetoric and say, we absolutely do not support anything along these lines that this man says. But they did nothing. Instead, they hypocritically host a rally in front of the White House, clearly casting blame on President Trump in the name of anti-Semitism when they can't just look in the mirror. So I think it is time. You know, usually I'm not in favor of boycotting companies, and I'm really not calling on anybody to boycott Ben and Jerry's and their decision to forge this partnership. But I wonder, you know, if Ben and Jerry's is even aware, if they even took the time to educate themselves on the Women March's ties to this man. I think it's time they do that. And as I wrote in my piece, I am going to, in the least, be resisting Pecan Resist. That's what they want me to do.
Gotta resist the resistance.
Yeah.
Gotta do that.
Yeah, I have to say I was kind of relieved. Like, at first, the first thing I did, it being very important, was read the description of the flavor.
And then
there was no peanut butter involved, nothing that was like a trigger food. I was like, okay, it's okay. I can go the rest of my life without having this.
I'm a huge sucker for a good graham cracker crust roll. That's my thing. And I also like bananas, I like marshmallows. If
well, then
you've got
you get
that going
it.
On. Yeah.
This is like a real problem with Ben and Jerry's because they constantly release these political flavors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I need to be true to my beliefs. But also, like, could you make like, you know, a conservative version of this that would support like, you know, pregnancy centers with the same
there we
flavor?
Go. That would there we be go. Great. That'd be great.
To be honest,
I always cave. If it's yummy, I cave.
To be honest, though, I've always thought Ben and Jerry's ice cream is overrated. It has nothing to do with their politics. So.
Whoa, fighting words.
I'm more of a vanilla girl. Like, give me a very good vanilla ice cream. I know that sounds lame and boring, but there's nothing better than a good vanilla ice cream.
I mean, you're just literally being vanilla.
Take that, Ben and Jerry's.
Okay. Well, our next topic is Glamour magazine. It's picked its Women of the Year, and of course, there are no conservatives on the list. Among the Women of the Year are Senator Kamala Harris, a Democrat from California, and the women involved in March for Our Lives, the pro-gun control movement started since Parkland. Bree, were you surprised at all to see no conservatives once again?
No.
I feel like I just fed you a question. Yeah. That was like very leading, but you know what I mean.
No, I mean, absolutely not at all surprised. I think it's very apparent that teen magazines, that beauty magazines that target toward themselves towards younger women have done this time and time again and have, you know, skewed themselves to favoring and giving a lot of glossy profiles to women who lean liberal and give a lot of airtime and attention to liberal ideas. I mean, just a couple of days ago, Teen Vogue was pushing for the Equal Rights Amendment. They're pushing for that to get passed. Last week, Kelsey, you and
I'd rather that than their promotion of socialism or whatever that was.
Right. They're trying to literally end capitalism. So I guess I'm not at all surprised to see this genre of magazines fan the flames and push up and hype up women and ideas that are liberal. This is just going to be their MO. This is what they do. And this is part of the reason why we're here, why Problematic Women exists, is because we're here to say, listen, there's young women who have different opinions, and here's what we think.
I agree. And I mean, was I surprised by this? No. And part of me just wants to stop even trying. Like, why do I have any expectations that a single conservative woman will be included on this list? But I do think it's important that we highlight these cases, the lack of conservative women on these lists, to keep telling them again and again, we do exist. Because if we just back down and don't call them out and don't tell them we're here, they're going to forget about us and they will start to think that we don't exist. So I will say, I believe it was New York Magazine who put together the most powerful women of the year list.
Right. And they named Nikki Haley.
They did include Nikki Haley. Of course, they also included Stormy Daniels right alongside her. Yeah. I thought that was
basically equivalent.
Right. Right.
And Marjorie from the SBA list.
Yeah.
She
Marjorie
was on there Dan too. Valser, yeah.
So that gave me some hope. So when I saw the glamour list came out, I was like, you know what? If New York Magazine changed its ways, maybe the rest of them will too. But I mean, one is better than none in that sense. But I don't know why someone like Nikki Haley didn't make this list. I will say I was happy to see they included some international women. The woman who helped launch the movement that gave women in Saudi Arabia the right to drive. I'm glad they recognized her. They also decided to recognize the multiple women who played a role in taking down Larry Nassar, the doctor who took advantage of hundreds of women in the gymnastics sex abuse scandal. So they certainly deserve to be on that list. They also included Chrissy Teigen. She's the influencer of the year, is what they say. Chrissy Teigen, of course, I think she's funny on Twitter. And to be honest, this is the problem with the left. Like, I can appreciate someone like Chrissy Teigen's humor and deeply disagree with what she's saying. Like, I tolerate her, basically, and I'm still able to laugh. But I feel like people on the other side are unable to do that. If we had a conservative version of Chrissy Teigen, it wouldn't be possible because the left would just be constantly offended by it.
Right. Even Taylor Swift being quiet. Not enough. Gotta denounce everything, Taylor, or else you're supporting fascism.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah, no, it is frustrating. And I think that goes back to, you know, just sort of this idea that for the right, politics isn't everything. And I think for a lot of normal people on the left, that's also true. But a lot of the activists on the left, everything becomes political. And so everyone must be political. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is what we expect from women's magazines. At the same time, you know, I don't know. I guess this is the pot calling the kettle black, but it does seem like there's an opportunity for, you know, a women's magazine that is either truly bipartisan or one that more is geared toward the right. Like, I certainly enjoy reading women's magazines, and it's sometimes a little bit frustrating that, you know, you're going to read, you know, all these profiles, but like, you'll never see one of Melania Trump. You won't see Betsy DeVos honored. Like, you're just never going to get that.
Totally. And I do wonder where that wealthy conservative donor is who wants to start a women's magazine. No secret message there, but you can find my contact info through thedailysignal.com.
Okay. Well, now that Kelsey is brazenly... all right, let's get to one of our favorite couples, or at least one of mine. Chip and Joanna Gaines sat down for an interview with People magazine. The Fixer Upper stars just had their fifth child, Crew, who's quite a bit younger than the other four. quote, "It's hard to believe this little turkey will only be 10 years old when Emmy is graduating from high school." That's what Chip said, referring to the couple's fourth child, Emmy, who is now 8. He also said, "I think we have to have another one because I'm particular about the only child thing. Crew needs a sister to manage this whole thing out. Don't be surprised if number 6 is in the cards." Well, you'd think that was a pretty innocuous thing to say, but no. Frida Garza, a writer at the liberal women's site Jezebel, is now mad at Chip. She writes, "Children are a gift and all that." I love that. A gift and all that. But Joanna has now given Chip 5 precious gifts, and she doesn't owe him a 6 under any circumstances. And unless Joanna says, "I want to have a 6th kid," then they probably shouldn't. Chip, buddy, stick to what you know best, cracking jokes and looking pretty, and give your wife a break. Guys, thoughts?
This is a lot. This is a lot right now. Like, let them live. You know what I'm saying? Like, liberals are all about, supposedly all about letting people live, letting people make decisions, letting people have the preferences that they have. He's expressing a preference. He identifies as a father of 6. He needs that to come true. And no, it's too much. Can't identify that way.
I was going to say, why don't we start with the fact that she called Chip pretty. Interesting word choice there.
That also struck me, but you know, I thought she was trying to be, I don't know, inclusive, non-binary, who knows?
I thought it was,
I think men can be pretty.
I think it was demeaning in a way. I think the tone sounded demeaning. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, I'm just gonna, Chip, just focus on your looks. Like, imagine if a woman was told that in reverse.
Oh.
It would be so demeaning, but because a woman's saying to a man, then it's perfectly acceptable. They're just so hypocritical.
That is an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think.
And it's not like Joanna's out there saying, "I don't want a 6th kid," right? Yeah. This isn't The Handmaid's Tale. This is not The Handmaid's Tale. She's not being forced to carry a child. He just expressed one preference, and we have not heard from her that she's actively like resisting this, right? And this is a Handmaid's Tale scenario. So I think like don't project your fantasies of Handmaid's Tale onto like everyone else's lives.
Right. And I think, you know, she did make a comment that, you know, it was harder being pregnant at 40 than, I guess, you know, she would have been, I suppose, 31 or 32 when she had the last one. But as far as I'm aware of, yeah, she hasn't made any comment along the lines you're talking about where, like, God forbid I ever have a 6 or I'm done with this forever. Like, yeah, I'm sure it was a hardship for her. Being pregnant is no joke. But I to me, this is another example, though, of the hatred of big families that we so often see on the left. And, you know, they're always claiming to be about choice. But here we have a couple who have huge financial means, seem to be well-adjusted, seem to be happy, I'm sure would responsibly discuss whether to have a 6th child. And yet, that's, like, how dare this dad want this? Like,
And how dare this dad want this for his child? I mean, I think that's completely natural to think of how this child is going to be raised. And for this writer to not see the value of siblings and not respect Chip's value that he places on having his child be able to enjoy the many amazing things about having siblings, I think it's pretty disrespectful. And at the end of the day, yeah, it's like, why is this her business? Like, this is when I think liberal writers run out of things to write about, and so they have to pick on fights that should have nothing to do with them.
Yeah, and I also think it's kind of insulting toward men. Like, obviously, the first 9 months of a child's life, it's, you know, it's the woman. It's a lot of work. But there's 18 more years after that, and plenty of good dads, you know, get involved, help at night, play with the children. You know, like, they're not, like, I think it's often 50-50. It is not some, oh, you got to do all this and I'm going to show up and drink my martini and pat them on the head. Like, Chip is presumably signing himself up as well for some pretty serious self-sacrifice.
Yeah, I think absolutely. This speaks to a larger point that the left doesn't want men to have any impact or any opinions on family planning. It should all be the woman's decision. So they have a problem with the fact that Chip even has an opinion on whether or not they have more children.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely part of what's going on here. Also, as the oldest of 5, the youngest in the family, so I'm 26, the youngest is 12. So big age gap between me and him, big age gap between the sibling directly above him. And hopefully he's not listening to this, but he's kind of a brat. So I think that Chip has a point that there needs to be some other kids there. You can't just be like the youngest by a lot of years, you know, like it kind of messes with you.
I mean, counterpoint. I'm the oldest of five as well. And thanks to twins, I was actually 5 and a half when the youngest were born. So we are the opposite, crammed very close together. And my younger sisters, who I hope are not listening, can also be a little bit bratty.
So, can't win. They're always going to be
the
brats.
Youngest. Well, no offense to the youngest, but the youngest out there, you get too much attention.
Counterpoint. since we're all going into our family tree here, I'm the middle of in the middle of two sisters, and we're all exactly 3 years apart. And it's interesting when you think about wanting to have a family. I feel like everybody bases that on, do you want more or less than the amount of siblings that you had? And I'm like smack dab in the middle of all that. And I totally get reactions if I say I want more. They're like, what, you want like 4 or 5 children? Are you crazy? That's what people think these days of big families. And then to me, only having 2 sounds like a tiny little measly little family.
Oh my God.
Well,
I want 3 daughters and I want to name them April, May, and June. Isn't that funny?
That would they find it funny? That's what I want to know. You might want to give them a little bit of an opt out of that one. Maybe his middle name.
Wow. Okay. But, coming out here is savage.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I mean, I respect your choice, your name identity. Just going to be giving them some paperwork to change their
names. Does that mean
names.
They're all going to be girls?
Yeah, I only want daughters.
No, you could totally name a boy May.
Well, they get to pick their own gender, so you don't get to decide that
true.
Anyways.
Yeah, true. You got to raise babies. Okay, well, we're going to leave it there for today. Thanks so much for listening to the Daily Signal podcast, brought to you from the Robert H. Bruce Radio Studio at the Heritage Foundation. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud. And please leave us a review or rating on iTunes to give us any feedback. And of course, you can check out Kelsey's work on the Daily Signal and Bree's work on the Federalist. And Daniel and I will see you again tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Daily Signal podcast, executive produced by Kate Trinko and Daniel Davis. Sound design by Michael Gooden, Lauren Evans, and Thalia Rampersad. For more information, visit dailysignal.com.